Evening, everyone. Good to see you. So we're continuing the series on wisdom, and this evening we're going to think about the truth. Now, the truth is very important, and it's a major theme of the scriptures. So, you know, settle down. You haven't got anything to do for the rest of this tonight and into tomorrow morning. You go, you know, those of you who've got work could just go direct from here, couldn't you? And we could really thrash this out. Or probably more acceptably to you, I'll try and give you 20 minutes on wisdom and truth, maybe 25, depending on how a bit of discussion goes. So, first of all, I thought a bit of light relief, just to get you thinking. Have the next slide, please. Here are people who have famously told lies. Who reckons they could name two of those people? Some of them are very good, Tendai. Anyone else reckon they could name two? Anyone name three? I'd be very impressed if anyone could name three, because some of them are quite... Tendai reckons she could name three. How many do you think you could do, Tendai?
Top left, top right, and bottom left.
So you reckon you could get three?
I think so.
Well, at least name your three, and then we'll see how we go. And if you could summarise the lie they told, if you know, that would be great. Or do your best. You don't have to get it right.
Jesse Smollett, that was during lockdown, something about him being attacked. Bill Clinton, his lies and many other things with the lady in it, was his secretary. Monica, yes. And the third one, he's a cyclist who doped, but I forgot his name now, it just slipped. Yes, Lance Armstrong.
Okay, very good, Tendai. If I had a little prize, you'd have it. But we'll give you a round of applause, because that was quite good. This is illustrative of famous lies in sort of different arenas of the world. So you've got Lance Armstrong, top left. He was a famous cyclist, always a world beater, famously always talking about how righteous he was in not taking drugs, and then he got caught taking drugs, okay? And total shame. The lady in the middle there, I had to put a lady in case you thought only men tell lies. That lady is called Elizabeth Holmes. And she had a tech company that became very, very valuable on the basis that she reckoned she could replace traditional blood tests with just a pinprick of blood. And then it turned out that she had that the firm had falsified all the data. And so she was convicted of fraud, I believe. You're right, the top right is Jussie Smollett, who, I mean, amazingly, conspired to get some people to beat him up, and then came to the police station and reported that he was a victim of a hate crime, and then it came to light that he'd staged the whole thing, and he ended up getting convicted of wasting police time. Bill Clinton hardly needs to be mentioned, but I mean, probably, I don't know, it's a toss-up between him and Richard Nixon. You take your choices. I mean, maybe you want to throw others into the mix. I won't start. There are other politicians who have lied. But Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon in particular made this a particular art form. Now, the last guy there is a guy called Brian Williams, not so famous here, but quite famous in the States. He was, I think, a news anchor, a reporter, who some years ago, it did feature in the UK news, he'd been telling a story about how he'd been caught up during the Iraq war in an attack on a helicopter he was in. And over the years, it came to light, as people researched him, that he'd been gradually embellishing this story. And in fact, he never was in any helicopter that was shot at. And that led to a whole sort of meme on social media, on the internet, of people putting his face on famous events from history and pretending he was there, like Brian Williams popping up on the landings on the moon and so on. All right, well, a bit of light relief, but actually it's dead serious, isn't it? You know, fraud, very, very serious. Cheating in sport just undermines the integrity of the whole thing. Politicians who lie do grievous damage, and not just to themselves, and so on. Next slide, please. Words matter. The truth matters. It is incomprehensible that this needs to be said, but in our culture, this needs to be said. Because our culture has got itself into quite a mess on this. Let's just have a few opening thoughts. First of all, what is the truth? Anyone know a biblical character who said that? Pilate. He had the truth standing in front of him, actually, and he didn't recognize it. And he had got into this position of cynicism, which leaders are often tempted to do, actually, because they're confronted all the time with everybody's different perspectives. They can get a bit punch drunk and come to the conclusion in the end that there's no such thing as the truth. It's not unusual for leaders to begin to lose their moorings in the truth under the pressure of leadership. And that's what happened to Pilate. But it's a sad state of affairs. And in our culture today, because of the loss of faith in God, I would suggest, there isn't really in most people's minds, or in a lot of people's minds, an anchor for the truth to be embedded in. And so for many people, they see the truth as a flexible thing, and some philosophers even don't believe there's such a thing as truth. Now, that'll have to wait for another talk on post-modernity and trends in contemporary philosophy. But many people today actually are a bit dubious about truth. And certainly they're a bit dubious about whether we can know the truth. But what is truth? Well, essentially, perhaps without getting too philosophical, it is anything that coheres with reality. And so a lie is an attempt to create a different, create a perception that is not real. That's a bit wordy, so if you like, a very good definition of a lie is an intention to deceive. If you intend to deceive someone through your words, you are lying. That is a good definition because people get into all sorts of ways of deceiving people without in their minds technically lying. A good example of this is a word, I like this word, sophistry. It means getting clever, is what my dad would have said. He'd say, you're being clever. And he'd said it in a disdainful way, as if to say, you are using your intellect to sort of be able to present what you have just said as literally true when you obviously had an intention to deceive in the way that you said it. If you want to see a good example of sophistry, turn on the post office inquiry on Tuesday morning. They're all at it. Because they have clearly, in my judgment, lied, a whole lot of them. And they are going on lying because the consequence of them telling the truth is very serious for them. It seems to me they've all had legal advice and they've been warned what to say and what not to say. And I think there's a lot of lying going on. And, you know, if this is recorded and any of them choose to sue me, I'd be happy to repeat it in court because I'm sure that they have lied. And what they are doing is when asked straight questions, they don't give straight answers. They start sort of getting clever. They say, oh, could you repeat the question? Oh, I didn't understand that word. What did you mean by that? They are doing anything they can to avoid giving straightforward answers to straightforward questions. That is sophistry. It's got its roots in the word Sophia, wisdom, but it's a perverted form of wisdom intended to avoid the obvious consequence that you're trying to lie. Now, that's one type of lying. What other types of lie are there? I'll give you a moment or two, a bit of interaction. There's a lot of different ways that people intend to deceive others. Anyone else got a suggestion? Creativity. Sorry?
Creativity. Do you want to embellish that point?
Not that I promote creativity, but I'm a financial person. Sometimes I've got to choose my words now. Sometimes I'm told that I'm creative with figures, which could also be interpreted as a lie.
There's a thin line there somewhere, isn't it? But I think probably instinctively we all know when we've crossed it, really. Creative accounting, people sometimes refer to that phrase, don't they? Any other ways in which people... I mean, let's get out there. There's the whopper, isn't there? Just telling something that is flat out untrue, okay? But the whopper is not the cleverest form of lying because it's fairly easily exposed. Any other forms of lying?
I don't lie, by the way, but exaggeration. So making something sound a lot better than it is.
Exaggeration. Now, again, there's a line here somewhere, because using language to sort of, as long as everyone understands what you're doing, to entertain or whatever, there is some, but there comes a point at which it becomes a bit deceptive. And it's usually because you're trying to make an impression on other people. It's a bad idea. It's a bad habit to get into. What else?
I'm not 100% sure about this one, but not correcting someone. So they say something, they think they understand what you said, and then you just don't correct them.
Very good. You could see somebody trying to defend that. But if you allow someone to continue in a misconception, there comes a point at which you're probably responsible for that misconception, aren't you? Oh, we've got more. This is good. All the experts in lying are... No, what am I saying? Steve, you're definitely not.
I have something slightly controversial to say here. Regarding lying, where I read a book about history, and it said that people recording history don't necessarily tell the truth, but if they did tell the truth, it would be very boring, and we wouldn't really take much notice of history. And so they embellish it a bit and make it a bit more interesting, and then it sticks in our head. And although it's not necessarily wrong, it perhaps is not necessarily the correct truth, but it makes it more interesting and therefore sticks in our head. So what do you have to say to that?
I think it's a lie. No, sorry. Well, it's absolutely evidently true. And actually, sometimes what postmodern historians would say is the only people who ever write history are the victors. So you're only ever getting one perspective. And there's definitely some truth in that. But again, I don't think it's a whole truth. I think there's a difference between telling a true story in such a way that you're presenting it that it is engaging. It goes back to creative accounting, but there's a point at which in doing that you begin to distort what you know to be the truth, and then that's lying. But these things are, it's difficult to say that's definitely on the right side and that's definitely on the wrong side. I mean, who would buy a newspaper that was just a list of facts? Well, nobody buys newspapers at all anymore, do they? But you know what I mean. So we're not saying there's no room for creativity. We're not saying it's wrong to present your beliefs in a persuasive way. That's not wrong. But as soon as you are intentionally deceiving people, then that is lying. And there's actually many, many more types of lies. But let's move on. Now, is it possible to know the truth? As I said, there are philosophers around who say no. They don't. The radical version of this is that there is no such thing as truth. The less radical, you might be amazed to think that people would believe that, but that, believe me, in our university philosophy departments, there are lots of people who believe that. And are busy teaching our young people that that is true. It's a bit self-defeating, of course, because if there's no such thing as truth, how can they be so sure? But anyway, that's a logical problem. Most people don't find that sort of stuff very convincing. What is much more common and has an element of truth in it is that although truth is out there, we only ever see our perception on that truth. So we have to be a bit cautious about claiming to have the 100% truth. In any situation, only God sees everything. We have a perspective on it. Now, that doesn't mean that what we know to be true isn't true. It just means there's always more to it than we see. So if we think about our faith in God here, what we believe about God revealed in the scriptures is true. But I don't think any of us would claim we know everything there is to know about God. And so there's always more for us to learn. So we have to be humble about our understanding of the truth. But that does not mean that the things we know are true. We cannot be confident in it. It just means we have to be aware there might be more to it than we know. Let me give you an example. I am a middle-aged man. That is true. That's not the whole truth about me, but it is a true fact. If I told you I am a young man, I would be lying. It's not true. If I say I am a middle-aged man, I'm telling you the truth, but it's just not the whole truth. Does that make sense? So we can know truth, absolutely. We can know true and reliable things, but we can't know everything, which means we always have something to learn. One final comment is this. Those who don't believe it, that truth is objective, that we can really know things that are true, they tend to get very cynical about truth claims. They will start to say that people who are claiming to know the truth are really just trying to exert power. And that narrative lies behind a lot of what's going on in our culture. That people are saying, you can't be sure about what you think, and if you are too sure about it, you're just trying to exert power, and I'm rejecting that. And we could reflect on that at some length, but it means that we have to be quite careful as Christians when we're trying to present the gospel. Because some people, at least, when they hear us presenting the gospel, what they will hear is, you're just trying to control me. You've got a version of the truth and you're trying to impose it on me. You can't know that is true for sure. And for that reason, we have to, when we come across that attitude, which is quite common in our society, we have to be quite humble in how we present the gospel. And that's okay, because we were told to be humble about how we present the reason for the hope that we have by the Apostle Peter. I found this online, next slide please, and I think it's quite helpful just to talk about the two main ways, two main aspects of a lie, and they are both often present in a lie. There are two sort of sides to it. On the one hand, there is withholding true information. Now, of course, you're not required to tell people every single thing you know every time you speak to them. That would obviously be ridiculous. But if you withhold information in an attempt to divert someone from the truth, that's lying. Similarly, on the more creative side, if you like, there's falsification, saying things that aren't true. And that would include sort of putting a spin on things, which although the words you are saying might be literally true, they are creating a false impression. And of course, often a liar will use a combination of both of those two things. They'll conceal certain facts and falsify others in order to divert you from the truth. All right, well, what does God's word say about all of this? I've got a few verses from Proverbs for us to read together. So let's start in Proverbs 6. What does God think about lying? Proverbs 6 and verse 16 to 19. There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and then if we go down further, a false witness who pours out lies. So in identifying seven things that God likes, two of them are the same. It's a person who doesn't speak the truth. And then Proverbs 12, 19, we've already heard, but how about verse 22? The Lord detests lying lips. These are strong words. God does not have a mild aversion to lying. He hates it. And then towards the end of the book, Proverbs 24. An honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. Would you rather that people told you the truth or made you feel good? Well, what this verse says is that actually honesty in the long term is the way to make people feel good. When you tell people lies, or when we hear lies that are reassuring, but that is a false reassurance, in the long term, that is not for our benefit. And in the long term, it will create more trouble than in the short term, the reassurance it gives us. An honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. Don't trust people who just tell you what you want to hear. Surround yourself with people who will tell you the truth. And verse 28 of the same chapter, do not testify against your neighbor without cause. Would you use your lips to mislead? I think that's a really good question. Think of the way you speak. We've all lied, right? Nobody's here is claiming that they've never told a lie, goodness. But is that what you want to use your mouth for? And finally, Proverbs 26, 28. A lying tongue hates those it hurts, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Flattery, by the way, another form of lying. Well, what then are the consequences of lying? Very quickly, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So when you speak a lie, you are parting company with Jesus. You're walking away from him. Doesn't matter whether you can come up with some spurious justification, Jesus will see straight through that. When you tell lies, you walk away from him, you offend him, you reject him, the Lord hates it. So lying, persistent lying, will leave you alienated from God. Now, we all tell lies at times. It's a kind of natural human reaction in some senses. But when we do, we need to put it straight as quickly as possible. Straight with God and straight with those that we've lied to. It's humiliating to do, but it's a lot better than you getting caught. Secondly, if we corrupt our relationship with God when we lie, we also corrupt our relationship with others and we do damage to human society. Next slide, please. Truth and trust are very intimately connected. Some years ago, a doctor called Harold Shipman was found to have been systematically killing off his patients. And he'd presented himself as one thing, and he was actually something terrible. And what's the consequence of that? Trust in doctors has been damaged. When politicians lie, people stop trusting politicians. When car salesmen lie, people stop trusting car salesmen. When estate agents lie, people stop trusting estate agents. When you lie, people stop trusting you. And when you lie, please be aware that most people will know. They may not be able to prove it, but the worst thing you could ever be is a good liar. Most people aren't really that good at it. They may not challenge you, but they'll have you down. Do you want people thinking you're a liar? And thirdly, lying when you're caught in it leads to shame. Next slide, please. Dogs, when they've done something wrong, they definitely have this look about them, don't they? As if to say, well, it wasn't me, I'm sorry. What? Our dog definitely can have that look about her if she gets the impression she might have done something wrong. Now, it's all very charming when it's a dog, but it's not so charming when it's a human being. And that's just a humorous way of looking at it, but it's much, much more serious. Richard Nixon, he told a series of lies about something, led a major cover-up, and next slide, please, and then he was caught. His reputation was trashed, he lost his job, he went from being the most important man in the world to being a nobody overnight. Why? Because he got caught lying about something serious. And lies don't stay still. You tell a lie, and then before you know it, you have to tell another one to protect the lie, and then before you know it, your whole life has become a deceit and a pretense. He's a cautionary tale, really. His lies diminished him. On his team was also a person called Chuck Colson. Next slide, please. And he was part of the kind of conspiracy, and he went down to jail for his part in it. In jail, he found Christ, and he went on to become a very significant Christian leader. You can read about him if you want to. He led something called Prison Fellowship International, I think it was called, or something. It was an outreach to prisoners all over the world, and a very powerful advocate of Christian faith. So if you are a liar, there's hope for you. God can take liars and make them righteous. God has the capacity to restore. I want to close by just appealing to you to have an absolute commitment to the truth. And this is particularly to those of you who are younger and are on your way up in life, in your careers, and in all the rest. Tim Keller tells this great story. He tells a story about a man who ran somebody over in their car. And rather than stopping to check they're all right and call an ambulance, they just drove off. And very sadly, the person died. And when the investigation was complete, they found the guy in question and arrested him. And the expert opinion was that had he stopped and called an ambulance straight away, this person would have lived. But because he fled the scene, they died. He went to court, put in prison, and somebody interviewed them in prison, went to see them and said, why did you flee the scene? Why didn't you stop? And he said, I've thought about that, as you'd imagine, endless times. He said, and I think it goes back to my childhood. When I was a child, my father had a really nice gold watch, pocket watch. And when we were very small kids, we used to like to see it and play with it. But my father always said to us, you are not allowed to play with it unless I am here. Anytime you want to play with it, you can. If I'm here, you ask me, I'll get it out for you to play with, but only when I'm here. And he said, when I was a kid, I wanted to play with it. My dad wasn't there, and I got it out, and I dropped it, and it smashed. And I picked up the pieces and put them back into the box it was in and put it back in my dad's drawer and closed the drawer. Inevitably, my father found it broken, and he called us kids together, and he said, who's been playing with this? Who has broken it? And I toughed it out. I lied. And in the end, my father couldn't work out who had done it. And I escaped the consequences of my actions. I learned a lesson that lying works. That was a terrible, terrible lesson for him to have learned as a child. And it made him vulnerable to the catastrophe that came into his life later. I wonder why these managers in the post office walked the path they did. But in one sense, we can't sit in judgment on them, because who here hasn't told lies? Are we absolutely sure that if we'd been in that environment, we'd have had the courage to tell the truth? Particularly those of you on the way up in your careers, moments will come when you are under intense pressure to tell lies. Those around you will be telling you to do it, and it might be very costly for you to tell the truth. But I want you right now to resolve that it is better to tell the truth than play around with lies. I bet those folks who are now being examined in this inquiry wish they'd had the courage to tell the truth. Don't get caught in deception. Speak the truth. Resolve to do it now. God bless you.